Welcome to the Union for Reformed Judaism's Parenting Podcast. I'm Wendy Grinberg, Parenting Specialist. Today I'm speaking with Alfie Cohn, the author of a dozen books about human behavior and education, including Unconditional Parenting. In this last segment, we'll talk about parental modeling and sibling rivalry. What about the parents' needs? You know, sometimes I need help, or I need to sleep through the night, or I just want the house cleaned up, or I need to get out the door. So how do I handle that?
How much you change the way you act towards your kid and compromise what they need in order to meet your own needs depends on a number of different factors, including how old they are. When your kids are younger, you try hard to meet your own needs as best as you can without it being at the expense of what your child needs, and you try to figure out ways where you can sit down and say, how does this work for both of us? Like, I need to get out the door, and you're taking a long time. Even a preschool child, if approached in a serious and respectful way at a time when no one's in a hurry, like in the evening, what can we do so, you know, you're able to get stuff done without my haranguing you, and I'm able to get out the door? And sometimes kids come up with terrific ideas. And if they come up with silly ideas, you try them anyway, because the most important part of the process is the process, where kids know they're being listened to and consulted. You have to be prepared, I think, for some sacrifice of your ideal requirements. But on the other hand, there are often, usually, ways to make sure that you don't go nuts and that you get the sleep you need, which is a prerequisite to being able to do best for your kid, too, without saying, therefore, I'm going to fall back on constraints and restrictions and punishments and rewards, never mind the effect on my kid because I have needs. You know, so it's a balancing act.
Does that come into play with sibling conflicts?
Well, I treat sibling conflict as a problem to be solved, not a fact of life. And there are lots of ways to think about the ways that we are subtly setting kids against each other, creating a competition for our attention and love, because on some level it benefits us. And that's not often done explicitly and in a way that parents can see. But sometimes we do this in subtler ways. You know, who can get their pajamas on fastest is one obvious way where, you know, we get kids to rush because it suits our needs. But the underlying thing is your sister is somebody to be beaten, a rival. And when kids do challenge each other or do things then with each other that aren't ideal, this is something where we sit down and we try to figure out together what's going on, the same way we would with any other conflict that a child is engaged with. Again, you don't come up with a solution on your own and impose it on children. That doesn't teach them how to become problem solvers. You bring the kid in on the process of thinking, how does that make him feel? How could I have made him feel better? What should I do when I'm really frustrated, when he just runs roughshod over my needs? And that's how kids learn to be both caring and good problem solvers throughout their lives. Unfortunately, the heavy-handed parental control approach not only makes the situation worse, but fails to teach kids, to help them develop the dispositions and the skills that they'll need when we're not around.
Do you think it's important for both parents to be, let's say, a united front?
The united front argument is used to say that mom and dad or parents and teachers shouldn't disagree about policies involving kids, or certainly shouldn't disagree in front of the kid. And I disagree with that, because if they are a united front, the kid experiences them as being united against me. And that's the last thing we want. Also, adults have disagreements. And I think it's very useful to model for kids that adults, that people, can disagree and they can still love each other. And they can work out the disagreement respectfully, maybe in front of the child, as opposed to the pretense that all grown-ups see things the same way. So if we're talking about, is it okay to have another cookie, or can we push back the bedtime since it's a special occasion, I think it's perfectly fine for mommy and daddy to talk about it when they start out on different positions.
So let me ask you this. When we slip up, can we expect that the relationship is resilient enough that our children will give us the benefit of the doubt? I'm talking about 3-year-olds to 18-year-olds to 40-year-olds.
Well, the answer will vary not only based on age, but also based on what's happened before. Nobody gets it right all the time. God knows I don't. We all slip up. But instead of just saying, that's okay, kid will get over it, I think what we want to do is address it, and address it immediately, as soon as we're able to apologize. It's a powerful thing. It takes guts for a parent to apologize to a child, to say in the morning, you know, last night I said something to you. Remember when you were coming in from the TV room? And I could see it kind of hurt your feelings, and I'm really sorry. And if I ever say anything like that because I'm in a bad mood and it hurts your feelings, please tell me. That's powerful stuff. And by the way, that helps, again, to teach kids about how it makes sense to apologize. What you can do is set an example and be that kind of parent.
Thank you for listening to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast, let us know what you think, and find more resources at urj.org/parents.